Welcome to Sketchbook Podcast, a discussion about inspiration and process with artists, creators, and designers. I'm your host, Daniel Montoya Jr. Do you remember Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel, Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins, or Nasty, Nasty Boy by Janet Jackson? What about three of my favorite movies of all time? The Transformers, the movie, One Crazy Summer, or Flight of the Navigator? Can you recall who won the 73rd Tour de France that year? It was Greg LeMond. The most popular name of 1986 was Michael. And it just so happens, on a beautiful 74-degree day in San Diego, California, Michael Edward Bishop came screaming into the world like an eagle attacking its prey. Go Birds. You might know Mike from his work with the Blue Stars, Rhythm X, Carolina Crown, The Crossman, Cedar Park High School, just to name a few. Mike also creates soundtracks for podcasts, commercials, dance teams, color guards, as well as sound design for the marching arts or pageantry. And stay tuned, because Mike will be appearing with United Percussion and the Cadets Drum and Bugle Corps. He's a big fan of Yamaha, Vic Firth, Zildjian, and Remo. And he is a brother of Phi Mu Alpha Sinfonia Fraternity of America. Med Shop, Michael Edward Bishop. My condolences on last night's Eagles loss to the most hated Dallas Cowboys.
Thanks. Didn't feel great. Wasn't my favorite Sunday night of all time.
No. Now, one of your closest friends, Evan, appeared the day after an Eagles win. Unfortunately, you don't get to do the same thing.
I was really looking forward to coming in here, wings flapping, mm-hmm. and just kind of, you know, doing the whole bit. But taking this one on the chin a little bit, it was a rout against my least favorite team of all time.
Mine as well.
Yeah.
Mine,
I love that well. About you. It's one of my favorite things about you.
That I hate that the Cowboys.
A fellow Cowboy hater.
Oh, I'm the biggest. That's why people don't like me, Ryan Johnstone. I just don't like the Cowboys. I don't like dem boys.
You know what's the worst? The worst type of sports fan to me as a Philadelphian is the local Cowboy fan in Philadelphia. they are the epitome of an anti-fan. Like, they are, it's a counterculture of people who are going against, like, you're from Philadelphia, you like the Eagles. Just, if you don't and you grew up there, then someone raised you wrong. You know what I mean? Like, come on.
Yeah, sure.
And there's always those people. Those people that just kind of, mm-hmm. they come out of the woodwork. We call them cockroaches in Philadelphia. I mean, and that's like on the radio. That's what the radio personalities have called them over the years. Here come the cockroaches on Monday morning coming out of the woodwork because they're dumb team one. I can't stand them.
They're dumb
team one. I can't stand the Cowboys.
Now, Michael, you are wearing a very smart looking Super Bowl champion shirt from when the Eagles won the Super Bowl last.
Yeah, that was only a couple of years ago.
Was it?
Unlike the Dallas Cowboys, who last won their Super Bowl in a different century.
That is
most
literally
Cowboys
correct.
Fans that are in our age group were either young, very young, or not born mm-hmm. at the time. So, yeah, I'm wearing a Super Bowl shirt because I experienced one where my team was in it and then also won it.
That's correct.
So two things. Making it out of the first round of the playoffs is a big part of going to the Super Bowl.
That's, yeah, making out of
again,
the first round.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the
not
Cowboys
just a bye.
Wouldn't know that, right. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I wonder if the Cowboys would like to do that at some point. You would think that they want to. I don't know.
Well, they have a head coach that claps for them on every play.
He's the clapper.
Good or bad, so.
That's right. Jason the Clapper Garrett.
I don't know, you know, if they can get through, if they can get him to a Super Bowl. Because it's not him getting them to Super Bowl.
That's
if
right.
The players are getting to Super Bowl.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, we could go on all day talking bad about the Cowboys, and we will. But, Mike, one job I did not see in your biography is that you were a conductor, a monorail conductor.
Oh, man.
Are you ashamed of your time at Disney?
No, I am. I couldn't be prouder of being a monorail pilot.
Wait, it's a pilot?
Because we are the highway in the sky.
You're kidding me.
No, it's your. We wore my Disney monorail pilot costume was uniform costume was a pilot's outfit.
Uh-huh.
Maroon slacks, a white pilot shirt with the epaulettes or whatever mm-hmm. they are called up on the top. I had wings. We had flight wings with a little monorail on them.
Uh-huh.
And we had on the cold days, because it does get cold a little bit in Florida in the wintertime in that part of Florida. We would have these big, you know, like just jackets with coats with this fur lining, you know, that you see like pilots wear.
Uh-huh.
And we were pilots. I had this bit that I would do. So if you ever ride the Disney World monorail, there's the, you know, the doors open. It's please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
That's way better than what Evan did.
Yeah.
Oh, I just want to clarify that for everyone.
I lived it every day. I've probably heard that more than any person on earth. And so then the doors close, right? And then you hear this kind of voice come in over the speaker. And it's like, welcome aboard the Walt Disney World, right? So you could, as a pilot, when they were human operated, I think they're computer operated now, but when they were human operated, yeah.
Blast.
Robots taking our jobs. When they were human operated, we had the option of canceling out that spiel and doing our own. So I would do something like,
good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome aboard Monorail Purple. This is Captain up here in the cockpit speaking. I will be cruising today at about 35 feet above sea level, top speed of about 45 miles per hour. Just going to go ahead and get out of here. We'll get everybody seated and loaded up here. Then get the clear for lunch and then sit back, relax, enjoy the ride.
And that would be like my thing I would do. Because, you know, I mean, you want to make it magical for the guests.
It's magical, yeah.
Part of the Disney experience is making it feel special for them. And you sign plenty of autographs as Monorail Mike. And
Monorail Mike.
Yeah, man. I brought little kids up in the front to sit with me and let them honk the horn and stuff. And that was like, when I was a kid, my mom can attest to this, and a lot of parents can attest to this. If your kids, and I was one of these kids, if they latch on to the monorail as their thing when they're at Disney World, like, they, you know, there's 12 different colors and they all have a different color stripe and there's 12 of them.
Oh, wow.
And so when you, like, they're like, well, I have to ride the blue one, or I want to do this or that. And back when I was a kid and back when I was working there, we could have kids come ride in the front with us in the cockpit. There's seating for a family of four or five up there.
Mm, okay.
And I would demand every time we rode the monorail that we had to ride in the front with the pilot. And that would sometimes mean waiting for three, four, five, six monorails. You know, my mom was just, she was an angel about being patient. So it was cool for me to be able to do that with kids when they were doing their thing. One of the coolest things I ever did in my entire life is when, for me, and I'm sure for a lot of monorail pilots out there, is getting to take a monorail out of shop. It's called out of the hangar. So back in Disney World, not to ruin any magic for anybody, but
cover your ears up.
Behind Space Mountain. So if you pass through the Contemporary coming from the TTC, you're going over to the Magic Kingdom, you'll notice there's a spur to the right. Mm. If you take that spur, that goes back to the monorail shop where the track splits and splits and splits. And eventually there's 12 lanes. And
makes sense.
That's where all the mechanics work on the train. So when the monorail pulls into the shop, it's actually sitting above ground. And so the mechanics can work underneath it. So when it gets busy, if they need more monorails on the track, you have to go take a monorail out of the shop.
Oh.
So they say, you know, I was there one afternoon. They said, hey, Mike, it's time to grab another monorail. It's time for you to take one out of shop. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. What does that mean? Just come on, we'll get in the car. And the manager drives me. And we're driving around the Magic Kingdom, around all the back lot. We get in there. I walk in, and there's this little museum in the lobby with all these different monorail photos. But this is pretty cool. And then we enter the hangar, and it's like, oh, man. It's just like movies music started playing behind me, and I was walking in slow motion. And I'm like, you know, I'm like doing the walk, and they're like, there's a ladder, like this mechanic rolls a ladder up for me. And it's like, you know, the engines are kicking on, and there's like guys pulling things away. It's like, I was like about to board an X-Wing. I'm like climbing up, and I get in there, and there's just like a whole series of radio calls. You know, it's like where they like basically... You go back and forth, and you're taking the monorail out of shop. But like, you have to be a good pilot to do this. Like, oh, only the, you know, it was like, only it was an honor. It was like, Mike, you've been chosen to do this. And it was pretty cool.
Did you pass Walt Disney's frozen head?
I can't talk about that. Oh, okay. We've signed an NDA.
That makes sense.
But it's one of the biggest honors as a monorail pilot. And it was one of the coolest moments of my life. I felt like a fighter pilot. I felt like I was about to pilot an X-Wing out of there.
Did they have steam as you walked through?
It was probably fake, but they make the magic for everybody. You know, it's all about sharing the magic.
That's right.
So yeah, it was awesome. It was a great experience. I did that for about like 3 or 4 months after aging out of Drum Corps. Just kind of didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life yet. Mm. And I was like, well, I'm just going to go hang out down here. This sounds like it could be fun. And so I did. It was cool.
Was it possible that you took a young Evan Van Doren for a ride on the monorail? Without even knowing.
Well, he would have been the same age as me because we're the same age.
But he's little.
But he is a little. He's a little guy. Yeah, it's definitely possible. I think there. I have come across a few times where people have said, "When did you work there?" And I said, "Someone said, oh my gosh, we were there during those months." And I said, "Well, did you ride the monorail?" They're like, "Yes, we did." It's very possible I drove you around.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Monorail, Mike.
Well, yeah,
it's something. I didn't know.
Lot of people on those trains.
There are. Wow.
365, including the pilot.
Wow. This is a big deal.
I'm just saying.
Mike, Why did you think I played saxophone?
Oh, man. You know why? Because you're not the typical drumhead, drum guy. And I mean that in a really great way.
Oh, well, thank you.
You have a lot of personality.
Oh, that's nice.
You have a lot of culture.
It's true.
You're not like the drumline guys, especially at a younger age, can be, and even years ago, I mean, I don't want to say that so much anymore, but you know, when I moved down here almost 10 years ago, drumline guys still had this kind of jock vibe to them. And you weren't a jock, and I mean that in a great way. Like, you were a very creative guy.
I was a nerd. All right, I guess.
Yeah, you were creative. You're into you're into music. You're into composition. You wrote for winds, and percussion people don't write for winds, right?
I mean, some don't write very well for it.
Yeah. So I thought, well, surely Daniel wasn't a percussionist. He must have played the saxophone or something. Because you didn't have the trumpet guy vibe either, you know, the brass, like,
sure,
I'm better than you vibe. So I thought for sure that you were a sax player. And then I was talking with the one Rolando
Chavez. That's right.
Roland Chavez at Cedar Park. And he was like, yeah, well, when Daniel and I were at Reagan, he was writing the Pit Book. And I was like, what? That's pretty cool. So,
wow. Yes. I think you admitted it to me in this very kitchen.
I remember being at this counter.
Yes.
And everybody was here. And I was like, so I got to say, we're like, what?
Insane.
So offended.
How dare you? Michael, what's your Rhythm X number?
176.
Does that mean that you're better than anyone with a larger number than you?
Oh, yeah, duh.
But that means number 175 is better than you.
Well, I'll say this. No. Well, sort of. Aaron Barrientos, he's awesome.
I'll take your word for it.
And then Adam Bostic is 177. But those guys, it's in alphabetical order every year. So, So when a new cast comes in, it's the new staff get the numbers, or the first set of numbers in alphabetical order. Mm-hmm. And then the new membership in alphabetical order, percussion membership, and then the winds membership in alphabetical order.
Oh,
so,
wow.
I think about it like the 170s to 190s, whatever it is that written 09 year are better than everyone else.
Better than everyone else. Yeah. Gotcha. That makes
sense. Because we got there first.
So is Andrew number one?
Andrew is number 63.
What? Who's number one?
Craig Dunn, the founder of the group.
And then Tim
Fairbanks is number two.
Who's number three?
Oh, God.
Is this on a test? Do they test you this?
Might be Hollis. Because it goes in alphabetical order.
Oh, I'm trying to think of who, except for Tim and the founder?
Craig Dunn.
Oh, so the founders were in alphabetical order also.
Well, it worked out that way. Craig founded the group by himself.
Oh, okay.
So in 2002, Craig ran the group as an open class group. Mm-hmm. And then Tim Fairbanks had come in to help Craig out a little bit. They needed some help. And they ended up winning open that year. And then went world next year. And Tim became more involved.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. But definitely. I mean, I know a lot of my buddies' numbers because, you know.
Because they brag about it. Yeah, it's tattooed on their chests, right?
Yeah. They have barcodes.
Barcodes.
Yeah. That's how you get into Bargos. You have to get scanned on your barcode.
God, that just made total sense. Bargos, barcode. I was going to save this question for later, but I'm just going to ask you right now. What's the best thing on the menu at Bargos?
Oh, the tenders.
You were correct.
You were
correct on that.
I know that. And I have to, not to like to actually talk about this that much, but I'm as a vegan.
What? Next thing you know, you're going to tell me you do CrossFit too.
I saw Hamilton live
or something.
I haven't seen Hamilton and I'm not a CrossFitter, but I do know that the tenders are the best thing on the menu.
When's the last time you had the tender?
2012, 2013.
Mm.
Yeah, they're great.
They're
when they come out, you have to wait. They're too hot.
No doubt. I made that
too
mistake.
Yes. Yeah, see, it's like, oh. But you know what? That's part of the real experience. Sometimes I look at somebody and I go, "Is your first time?" And I go, "Yeah." I go, "Okay." And I just let them burn themselves.
You'll learn,
right? But yeah, they're the best thing.
That's awesome, Michael. Do you truly believe in your heart that the Bastrop fires greatly affected Evan Van Doren in ways we still haven't fully realized?
Did you see the video?
I mean, yes. Why do you think I'm asking about it? I mean, Evan risked his life, many others' lives, going out in that weather, and we have video proof. He was on his hands and knees.
There is, in that video, and it still rattles me to this day, you hear him go, "Oh, God!" And whenever I hear that, "Oh, God!" I just feel like my heart sinks a little bit because I know that he is suffocating on the smoke.
Oh my God.
He couldn't get any lower. He was so low.
He was so low. Yeah. I mean, oh God.
We were all low that day.
Bless up to Evan. Thoughts and prayers. Topo Chico, mineral, lime, or grapefruit?
Mineral.
That's right. That's the right answer.
Come on now, dude.
Who likes grapefruit, first of all? I don't know.
I'll say this, that the lime was a gateway to the mineral.
Yes, I would agree with that.
But I do prefer the mineral much more. And correct. I think that that's okay. I mean, not to... So I go to Europe Once, twice, here we go. Right. And I always hate talking about it. I would never know how to bring it up. But they would be like, do you want water? I'm like, sure. Do you want still or with gas? And I'm like, I don't know. Let me try the gas. I'm like, this is disgusting. But then I got onto the Topo Chico train.
Yeah.
And now I love mineral water everywhere.
Oh.
But Topo is still my true.
Opened your
brain. I almost wore my Topo Chico shirt today.
I would have.
I know. I should have. But here's the thing. I'm wearing an Eagles shirt, as you mentioned.
Correct.
In Texas.
Correct.
The day after that, a Texas team routed us.
Yes. You're.
And that's because, and I hope I can say this sooner, I ain't no bitch.
You're a diehard.
Come on.
Eagles fan.
Yes.
So you're thick and thin, really. Right.
They need us today more than ever.
That is correct.
So here I am wearing this.
Yeah, where are all the Cowboys fans the last 3 weeks when they were losing to crappy teams?
Oh, man, we them boys.
Where were them boys at?
To quote some of my favorite Cowboy fan friends, like Ryan Johnson and Jason Robb, who said, I'm not a fan of this team anymore until they get rid of Jason Garrett.
Oh.
They were feeling pretty good last night. They were pretty big fans. So it's just funny how that happens. Yeah. Not to go back to that, but anyway, go Birds.
Let them have their tiny victories because they're not going to hold one trophy up at the end of the year. Favorite cheesesteak in Philly?
Jim's on the corner of 4th and South.
Wow. Is that a controversial take or is that?
No, like, I think a lot of people love Jim's. There's also D'Alessandro's, Ish Kabibbles, Steve's Prince of Steaks. Questlove is a famous Ish Kabibbles fan.
Gotcha.
I say this to people because I get a lot of inquiries about.
Obviously. You're probably the most famous Philadelphian in pageantry, probably.
I like to think that I'm in the mix there. Mm-hmm. And I do offer free tours when my friends come to town.
on the Philadelphia monorail?
Yeah, exactly. But I always say, just get a cheesesteak at like the most local looking place. Maybe a food truck on the street or on the corner. Maybe a little mom and pop. You're not going to find a bad one. If you want to do the Pats and Geno's across the street rival thing, that's cool. It's touristy. I don't think those cheesesteaks are very good.
Mm.
But, I mean, I get it if you want to go do it just to say you did it.
Just to say.
But my favorite has always been Jim's on the corner of 4th and South.
Wow.
They have been around since, like, I think the 30s or the 40s. They're OG, kind of walk in, you know, what do you want, next thing, kind of East Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Speaking of Philly, how did you get to Philadelphia from San Diego?
San Diego, Spanish for. My mom is from Philadelphia.
Okay.
My dad is from Tallahassee, Florida.
That explains two of those areas.
But, so my parents met in the United States Navy when they were stationed in Japan, in Misawa, Japan.
Oh.
And they happened to be both, they didn't know each other beforehand, obviously, they just happened to be assigned to the same building at work.
Mm-hmm.
Ran into each other, they were in the same circle of friends, fell in love, got married. I was made in Japan, but born in the United States, stateside.
So you can be president?
Yes.
Good.
By about 4 months.
Very good. That's great to hear. And you're a white male, so.
So it should be pretty easy.
Yeah.
Slam dunk. And so, slam dunk. My mom wanted me to be born on the United States soil.
Mm-hmm.
And San Diego has a huge naval base and naval
Correct.
Population.
Correct.
And so we were in San Diego. And at one point we moved from San Diego to the Tallahassee area,
mm-hmm.
where my dad's from, to be near his family. And then they ended up getting a divorce. And so my mom and I moved up to Philadelphia. I grew up spending my school year in Philadelphia, my summer down at my family farm in the Tallahassee area, a small town called Monticello, Florida. Not Monticello.
What?
Monticello, Florida.
Either is fine with me.
Yeah. And it's a small farm town in a small county, Jefferson County, hence the name Monticello. And
it's all making sense to me.
There's not a stoplight in the whole county.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
it's one of those.
How many teeth are in the county? I don't know anything about that place.
30?
Oh, that's good. And you have 20-something of them, right?
When I'm there, it's 62.
But that's right. Now, Tallahassee, what famous university is in Tallahassee?
It's definitely not the U. It's the FSU.
The FSU.
Florida State.
The U is not doing well.
Florida State is not doing well for the first time in 50, 60 years.
Well.
So that's been a tough one.
But. Yeah, is UCF the, I guess in Florida, right?
Florida is good this year.
Yeah, that's right.
Florida. There's other years where the Gators are trash.
That's correct.
Like typical.
Seems to be usually they're not good. But what do I know? I'm a Texas fan. All right. This is our first controversial question of the day.
Okay.
Torchy's tacos. Awful or just overrated? No. I know that you people, and by you people, I mean transplants, love Torchy's tacos.
I don't love Torchy's. And I'm not just saying that to pander to you right now.
Thank you. I
really don't love Torchy's. In fact, mm-hmm. my wife was just in town with me she came down to visit because I'm here for a while.
Correct.
And I said, she said, I really want some tacos. I said, all right, where do you want to go? There's a Torchy's nearby. And she was like, eh.
Oh, that's the right response.
I said, you know what, babe? I agree. Like, I don't love them.
Great.
I'll have them once in a while. They're a little bit overdone.
Sure.
A little bit overrated. A little greasy, a little gross. A little.
Yeah, I like grease, but.
They're not, you know.
Torchy's to me is a place that when someone visits Texas for the first time, I'm like, all right, here we go. And we go to Torchy's, we go to the Oasis, we go to Franklin's. Yeah, I like Franklin's.
Check them all off.
Yeah, you got to check them then and go like, I'm never going to Torchy's again. I just want you to know that, right? Just right. We're doing that.
Yeah. I mean, Franklin Barbecue is.
Oh, well, that's legit.
Legit. But like the line standing thing, that whole thing is like.
Correct. Right. Yeah. The experience of it all is like, all right, just get it out of the way. All right, cool.
I think I've done it three times. Like once for myself when I lived here,
yes.
Just to say I did it. And then like two times for visitors, like you said.
It's yeah,
like,
it's just.
You got to go to Franklin Barbecue. It's like, okay.
Yeah. All right. Great. We'll wake up early.
Yeah.
Mike, if you don't wear your drum corps jacket at the band show, how will anybody know?
They won't know. How could they possibly know?
God.
They're not going to recognize your necklace. Maybe.
No.
Unless, I mean, it has a lot of pennies on
a lot
it.
Of, a lot of gears.
Gears,
a lot
maybe.
Of Malteses. Yeah. Is that what they're called? Maltese yeah. X's or something?
Yeah, something like that.
The Crossmans.
Yeah. If you walk around with your shirt off and show off your sweet tattoo on your shoulder.
Your fleur-de-lis.
Yeah, your fleur-de-lis, your crowns.
Your, what's the phantom thing called?
Oh,
the chevron.
Chevron.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was marching crown, I feel like everybody in the Crown Brass, hashtag crownbrass.org.
Isn't it Crown Brass?
Yeah, hashtag yes. crownbrass.org. They all got the shoulder tattoo. That was super popular.
Oh.
And I have none of those things. And I mean, I obviously love the Carolina Crown. That's where I kind of came about. But yeah.
Do you have a giant X tattoo somewhere?
I don't.
No.
No, but those are also popular.
Do you have ink at all?
I'm inkless.
Oh,
I have been on the fence many times, but I'm too much of a wuss to go sit down and it's just the idea of that kind of permanence.
Correct.
It's just like, I can't, man.
Right.
I just.
But if you were to get an X, it would be on the tramp stamp, right?
Of course.
Of course.
Where else does one go?
No, seriously, it's perfect. It's right there. Or the crown right there. Yeah. Either one.
Yeah.
A crown with an X in the middle of it.
I have friends who've done that.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They're all out there, man. All these different tattoo ideas.
All kinds.
Yeah.
All kinds. Gritty. Great mascot. Or greatest mascot?
Greatest mascot. Well, see, I want to tell you that I'm struggling with that because the Philly Fanatic.
That was my next question.
Is the greatest mascot of all time.
Oh.
And Gritty is based on the Philly Fanatic.
Correct, as I've read.
And I Gritty, I think, is just the next generation of the Philly Fanatic. Not that Philly Fanatic needs another. Like, I think he's timeless and generationalist. but he, you know, he's been around for 40 going on 50 years now. He started in the 70s. And so, you know, I think the Flyers wanted to get a mascot. I feel like they needed one because as much as I hate to admit that as a hockey fan, I think hockey teams don't have mascots. That's a part of hockey, right? Like,
yeah,
we don't need a stinking mascot. We love the game, well, all that whole thing.
Yeah, sure.
But in this day and age, you need to generate dollars, you know? And so Gritty, having a mascot like Gritty will generate dollars. I am proud to say I'm a Gritty day one-er.
I noticed, I did some research on your Facebook wall. I went way back.
Oh, yeah.
You were in Europe, right?
Yes,
when the picture was released. Or Germany, yeah.
Yeah, Germany. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's in Europe. I remember waking up in a German bedroom and the picture. See, when you're that far ahead, you're also kind of behind.
Mm-hmm.
Because if something comes out a different time than the United States and you sleep through that, when you wake up, you're like, what happened?
Right.
And that I woke up to this orange monster. and they were like, the new Flyers mascot. And I said, no way. And I like clicked around and did some. I was like, oh my God, he's amazing. Look at him. Like, he's perfect. And then my favorite was all the memes of just like this. Like, I am Gritty and Gritty is me. Like, this is Philadelphia. We are. And the name, right? We're the Gritty City. Like that's not an official, like, we're the city brotherly love. But
correct.
We're Gritty. We're blue collar. We're just dirty, gritty people. And it's just, he's just perfect in every way. God, I love him.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. And you have no love for the San Diego chicken?
I mean, not really.
Yeah.
I don't. So that's the thing is, you know, there's so many things, and maybe you don't think about it if you live where you were born or grew up in the area where you were born. But it's like birthplace. And I have to put San Diego, and it's like I have no connection. I've been there twice, I think, in my life since living there as a small baby boy.
Right.
Once for WGI finals in 2004, and then I think maybe another time for DCI or something. But so I don't really have a ton of connection with that city.
Gotcha.
I know that it's paradise on the mainland, United States. I mean, it's like this sunny 74 every day.
Yeah.
It rains like 3 days a year. It's just perfect in all these ways. But I just have no connection there, so I never, ever go.
Makes sense. So I assume that means you're a Phillies fan, right? Not a Pirates fan?
Pittsburgh Pirates? No.
Yeah.
San Diego Padres? No. Philadelphia Phillies, yes.
Yes, you do. You do tend to put the what is it, the win loss record,
the record
on your Facebook.
Ring the bell.
Ring the bell Ring because the bell. Of the Liberty Bell.
Liberty Bell, and then we have a giant Liberty Bell in right field that has lots of lights on it, and it swings and rings on every home run, and lights up and flashes when we win. So when you win a game, we get to ring the bell.
You get to ring the bell. Ring my bell. Ring now, Michael, for all the folks listening to us at home in their cars, in their bathtubs, in the subway, walking their dogs, at the gym, or guarding bathrooms during standardized tests, describe in excruciating detail what shoes you are wearing.
I knew you were going to do this because I'm a listener of the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm wearing the Adidas Copa.
Oh, a soccer-based shoe.
That's yes. Right. It's a navy blue with white accents, white midsole, as you call it.
It is a midsole,
or outsole, and a tan gum rubber.
Gum rubber outsole.
Yeah,
gum rubber outsole. That's very fresh.
Thank you. I almost wore my, I have a pair of Adidas Pods, I think they're called.
Yes, the Pods.
They have the Boost Teal. But these are a little dirty. And those are dirtier. And I knew that you would clown me on my not keeping my sneaks clean, so.
I appreciate you thinking about me.
Yeah.
And I also appreciate you coming prepared for that question.
Of course.
It is arguably the most important question.
Well, yeah. Podcast. I mean, you are the shoe, what's the word?
Well, how do you say it for wine people?
I know. I'm trying to think of it. Wine.
A wine person's a sommelier.
Sommelier. You're the schumalier.
Schumalier.
The word aficionado was in my head.
Ah, so that's cigar aficionado. Yeah. Yes. Right. Yes. Yeah. Speaking of shoes, best shoe store in Philly.
Oh, man. You got me with this one.
Yeah.
There was a really great Adidas store on South Street that I would go to. I'm an Adidas fan.
Word.
I mean, that's kind of three stripes life. But,
that's right. Yeah.
There's. I don't think of Philly. I'll say this: Philly doesn't have a huge shopping scene like a lot of other cities, like in New York would. But we did. The city just put a bunch of money into this new shopping thing in the center of downtown. That's like right over a train station.
Oh.
And so that will have these. It just opened, I think. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I was at the grand opening actually.
Hashtag Humblebrag.
There will be these kind of like nicer shoe stores and things.
Gotcha. So. There's a place called Lapstone and Hammer. Are you familiar with this place? It's a boutique shoe store. You should check it out. I've ordered stuff online. I follow them on Twitter. Yeah.
I do know about, have you heard of Mitchell and Ness?
Yes.
That's a boutique sports store. That is in Philadelphia.
I have a Spurs jersey from Mitchell and Hess.
Ness.
Yes, I do have. Yeah, so I'm familiar with that one.
Their
so.
Flagship store is in Philadelphia, about a block away from where I got married, and I go there all the time.
Yeah, all right. You got some points.
Yeah.
You said, and I quote, "Is there a better pilot episode for a series than the pilot of Friday Night Lights?"
That's awesome. Come on.
Strong words.
I know.
Do you still feel that way?
I mean, I was living in the moment a little bit there.
I will agree, it is an amazing pilot. The only thing that doesn't make it the best pilot is he basically took the whole movie version and condensed it into like... the quarterback goes down. I get all that.
I'll be honest, I've never seen the movie. Here's why.
Okay.
I saw the series first, and I love the series so much.
Watch the movie.
I don't want to go back and watch the movie because I feel like it's not going to do it justice.
It won't. It's a different movie.
And I even started to read the book that inspired the movie.
Really? Uh-huh.
But again, I got the book. I fell in love with the story with these characters and these actors portraying these characters and this way of storytelling and you know the music. Explosions in the Sky.
The movie's Explosions in the Sky, which is great.
I was a fan of Explosions in the Sky years ago too. But the soundtrack that's in their style of Explosions in the Sky.
Yeah.
Like I just love T-Bone all that.
Something Burnett or something like that. Yeah.
And so I just love all that. And I was afraid that the movie. I still have that fear that the movie will be different.
Correct.
And I don't want to watch it.
Yeah. Tammy Taylor is way better in the series. She's very underdeveloped in the movie.
It's the same actress.
Same
right?
actress. Okay, yes.
So I know that she's the same.
And then Coach Taylor is obviously way better.
And
in
I'm
the
a
series.
Big fan of. Oh my God, I'm blanking on all these names right now.
God.
Billy
Bob Thornton?
No, the other guy.
Oh,
Coach Taylor on this TV series. Anything that he's in, I watch because I think he's the man.
I would agree with that. He's very, obviously that's like his role.
Right.
Like, you know,
he's like, let me tell you something.
He's so good. I want him to be my like head coach anywhere. Like come take over the Longhorns.
Every time I go back and I just go back and I like to start.
Kyle Chandler.
Thank you.
Yeah, I had to look at that.
But it was right there.
Yeah.
But anything that Kyle Chandler and John Hamm do, I will watch anything that they're in. They're just like two classic.
Mm-hmm.
They could just, whatever they play, I always am into that character.
Totally. So. Totally. Now, before we go on, I would be remiss if I didn't ask the hottest questions going on in the percussion world. Traditional or match grip?
You know, I don't really care. I mean, I, so my where I've kind of fallen into, and my background is in front ensemble, obviously. I do write for Battery Percussion, and I design for groups, and I run ensemble blocks and those kind of thing, and I teach battery kids. I think that the traditional thing kind of has its place. It's an art form. I think Richard said that. Mm-hmm. Richard Kern said that on when he was on here, and I agree with that. It's an art form, and it has value. I think especially in the independent part of pageantry, in the upper level independent part of pageantry, mm-hmm. you know, there's those kind of things and that skill set. But if you have high school beginners and you're just trying to get them to move and play, turn their hands over, man. That's cool. Just they can just hold a pair of drumsticks and go. You know, I just think that there's it depends on your kids, on your program, on your goals, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So it's to me, there's not a straight answer for that. It's just, it's, you know, it's moment by moment, not moment by moment, but
case by case.
Case by case. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Case by case basis.
No, that's a good answer. Finale or Sibelius?
Sibelius.
Have you used the new one, Dorico or Dorico?
I've want to really so
do,
badly.
As do I.
But they don't support VDL yet.
Yeah. I'm worried about all the samples and they just don't.
It's just, I don't AU, have the time.
Yeah, the VSL.
I need whatever. Someone else to make a template that I can purchase and just keep on going with my life.
Yes. Brian Harmson, isn't he the one that did that for Sibelius and VDL years ago?
I think so.
It was called the Right Score.
Well, the Right Score. I don't know if that's, I don't think Brian made the Right Score, but Brian made a video. And maybe Brian. I'm wrong, Brian. If I am, I'm sorry. But Brian made a DVD.
Right.
Called Virtual Drumline, like Unlocked or Unlimited or
Breaking the Vault or something. Yeah. I don't know.
And that video is like how everybody figures out. It's really funny. You know, you go to buy VDL and it, I get it, but it's like, oh, I bought VDL. It's like, okay, well now you have to also buy this Right Score template. It's like,
right.
Okay. It's 20 more bucks. You also need to buy this DVD.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of whatever, but, once you get it figured out, and I'll admit, I was a little bit of a VDL holdout. But once I finally dove into it, I was like, I should have just went to this like years ago. This is awesome.
Yeah, I was the same way. Burton or Stevens grip?
Stevens.
Yeah.
And even in the vibraphones? Even in the vibraphones.
What?
And I know that, you know, there's definitely schools of thought where they don't do that because, you know, Burton grips for vibraphone or whatever. But again, I approach everything in pageantry arts in a certain way. If I'm running a front ensemble program, my goal is to develop the players, the younger players, to be able to step in when older players age out or leave or whatever. So typically in today's percussion pageantry writing, typically the marimba parts are the harder parts and the vibraphone parts are typically the easier parts. That's just generally speaking. And you know, typically you play Stevens grip on marimba.
Right.
And so we kind of treat the vibraphones a little bit like metal marimbas and we develop those players to be able to play marimba the next year or two.
Yeah.
And you know, there's obviously case by case things where you're going to do certain things that only a vibraphone can do. Right. And so maybe we'll use Burton grip for that. I'm not saying all or nothing, but I train my kids on Stevens grip.
Right on. When describing a unison bass drum tam tam hit, is it a goosh or is it a boosh or do you have a different onomatopoeia for it?
I call it a bong hit.
A bong hit.
Bass and gong.
Bong.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Oh, it wasn't about the sound.
It wasn't onomatopoeia. My onomatopoeia for a bass gong is
Yeah, that sounds about right. We should get everyone to record their version of that and release it as a sample. No, I want the Bishop one there. And another Kearns one doesn't, you know.
The sketchbook sample pack.
Oh my God. Jim, give me a call.
Give me 5%.
That's right. Mike, are the drums just too loud?
Crank them up. Crank them up, baby. Come on. No, I used to, when I worked at Cedar Park and I was new to Texas bands and I was new to UIL, I like could not believe like what they were like, no, we have to like, they have to be softer. And I'd be like, I can't hear them, you know? And it was like, I would make the joke to Steve Wessels all the time. It'd be the morning of region. And I'd go, so Steve, so I'm just going to keep the percussion here. We're going to have sectionals. You guys are going to go ahead and go to the show. We'll hang back, right? You guys just go play. Everybody always laughed, but it's like, what are we doing, you know? But I mean, I get it. I get what UIL goes for. I know that it's also changing. There's some younger minds in there. Mm-hmm. When I first got to Texas, it was the old boys club. And
sure,
if you didn't sound like a concert band when you're standing up, then like, you know, you were doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. And that was always a struggle. And I think with so many of us transplants from the pageantry world coming here, because the excellence is so good.
Texcellence.
Yeah, the Texcellence is so high. It's like, oh, well, if we can apply these pageantry ideas to this Texcellence, then we might be able to get onto something here. And I think we have.
Sure.
And I think over the last decade or so, it's really changed a lot in a good way.
Just write less rim shots, please. Come on. And I'm a percussionist.
Yeah. I mean, that's all Dennis DeLucia wants.
Well.
He wants only three per show.
I think to me, and Tyler Salmon's just posted something about it. It seems like every month someone's posting about it. And I'm not going to generalize. But yes, it's always a transplant that has moved to Texas to work with our great kids and our great facilities and our great budgets. But that's a different story. And then they complain. In a lot of cases, it's justified about the old man UIL in the box kind of thing. But a lot of times I think it's overwriting, that a lot of people are writing for their drumline contests and then they don't remember that, oh, hey, your drumline contest was over when you went to Plano, or Lone Star is after state marching contest or whatever. Yeah. And they need to remember, like, write a drumline contest book and write a marching band show book and remember that the dynamics are different.
There's certainly groups that do that, right? Yeah. I mean, that was another thing when I got to Texas. I was blown away by, I remember getting there and rolling. I was like, so what's the first show? I was like, well, first band show is like October 5th or whatever, but we have a show September 20-something. I was like, oh.
The Dripping Springs contest?
Well, this is when we went to Plano.
That's right.
So we used to go up to the Plano contest, and I was like, what do you mean we have a show? It's like, well, we do a drumline show. I was like, what is that?
That's not a thing outside of the state?
Anywhere.
What?
And so for those of you not from Texas listening, it's basically, there's two ways to go about it. The way that we did it at Cedar Park was we did the standstill division, which is you set your front ensemble up in the field like you normally would, and then the battery just kind of arcs it up behind him, and you play your show down. Mm-hmm. It's like playing. I loved it because it's like everyone would always say, man, if they just had like a lot competition, you know, we would win. It's like, okay, well, here it is.
Yeah.
Like, just arc it up and play your show, man. This guy's going to walk around microphones in between all your kids and talk about them.
Yeah.
And that was all. I always thought that was awesome because I'm all into, like, you know, it's good or it's bad.
Yeah.
Let's put ourselves out there. Let's see who can really do it. And then I didn't realize this. We were done with the standstill. We were kind of getting ready for finals. And I was walking around and there was like, I heard a box six show sample, like Motivate. And I was like, sorry if that's copyrighted, Ian Grom and John Mapes.
They'll make a YouTube video about it.
And I remember like, is that an indoor show sample? And I like turned and there was like a group, like with their floor out, with their tarp, doing the show, like in their pajama pants, uniforms, whatever WGI people wear. And like, they're doing their show. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
What? And then Roland and I kind of talked and he was like, yeah, man. He's like, so, you know, if it's a UIL year, especially, you want to keep your percussion book really light so that you don't bother, you know, overbalance the winds. And that was kind of an approach.
Yeah.
I've always kind of come to the idea that You can come up with a show that can exist in both places,
yes.
BOA and UIL.
Mm-hmm.
And I, even though, like you said, as a percussionist, I agree that the winds are the most important voice in the show, generally speaking.
Correct.
There are always times when that's not the case.
Yes.
But if it's just a normal ensemble moment in the opener or the closer or something, and you're just cranking along, then yeah, I mean, we got to hear the wind parts.
Correct. Now, you know? But you came from a time, it changed a little bit. Cedar Park has always been one of the stronger playing bands. And so you have a Vandegrift, you have a Leander, you can drum.
Right.
You have some other programs that maybe are in the Houston area that subscribe to a certain theory to a T and don't play above a certain dynamic level, don't know what I'm referring to.
Boring.
Yeah. The drums can't go over like six inches, right? And so it is different from city to city, area to area, because the Leander ISD bands, not anyone, I'm not saying nobody else does it, but we're up here. They blow through their horns. And so the drums can, it's like, here we go.
Yeah.
We can play. This. Crank it up.
Yeah.
So yeah, it does differ. I get all that. And I think the writers have gotten a very good idea. It might literally only be Andrew Markworth that writes for the Leander.
I think Tim and then I think.
And Hector, Rarick writes.
Tom Rarick does for Vista Ridge. And there might be one or two others.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but Andrew writes for.
Andrew does three of them right now.
Cedar Park.
Rouse
and Vandegrift.
Vandegrift, yeah.
And then Hector does Vista.
And then Ian Moyer and Colin, I think, do Leander with Mike Zellers.
Yeah, that makes sense. That would make sense. And Colin's another guy that's figured out the game here.
Definitely.
Yeah. You have a really extensive biography.
Oh, boy.
You get on a plane, you strike up a conversation with the person next to you, and they ask you, so what do you do? What do you tell them?
This is what I do. I go, well, I make music for a living.
And then they go, oh, like movie music?
Like, are you on the radio? Like
rock and roll music?
Yeah. Like, have I heard you on the radio?
Yeah.
No, I'm in music for like productions and like shows and stuff.
Like Broadway shows?
Yeah, kind of more like marching bands. If you've ever seen like a marching band.
Oh, like Drumline the movie?
Kind of. It's a little different, but I mean, yeah, you know, I also do like soundtracks and stuff. And like
movies?
More like, I've done a couple commercials. I've done
anything I've seen?
No, I did like a CrossFit gym in Indianapolis.
Oh, I'm a CrossFitter. I'm also a vegan.
Oh, well, I don't really want to talk to you, even though I'm also a vegan.
That's right. So, no, but seriously, like you can't just say what you do in two words or three words. Like you do so much. It's all music related. So I guess that's the best way to say it.
Yeah.
But like explain to everyone what you do.
So a typical morning for me is like, I wake up like anybody else and,
very good.
Yeah. Thank you. And, one morning it might be, programming, an indoor drumline show, mm-hmm. writing the music for that, meaning writing the front ensemble music, pacing it out, electronic stuff. Another morning it might be working on a Wintergard soundtrack. Another morning it might be writing front ensemble and battery parts to a marching band show. Mm-hmm. It could be working on a podcast intro for somebody. It could be anything. So I work in Logic Pro and Sibelius all day. Those are like my apps that I just kind of, that's where I live. I described what I did to somebody one time and they called me a producer and I felt really cool.
Oh.
Like, so you're like a producer. I'm like, am I? Like, what? You like pace out and make music and like make the way it sounds for
right.
thing for music and for things. And I was like, yeah, you know, so that's what a producer is. And I was like, oh, that sounds pretty cool.
You'd be the second person. Keith Dutton does. He designs by Keith. He calls himself a show producer. So yeah, you're a music producer.
I'm a
wow.
music producer.
Wow, you're the second one I know. I'm very honored.
Well, hashtag blessed.
That's right. Here we grow. Continue. Or is that?
Well,
that?
I mean,
you do so much, so.
I get to travel a lot. You know, I'm down here right now. I mean, I started in the activity obviously as a player, but then I went on to be a teacher and educator, mm-hmm. and I call myself a coach, which sounds like kind of like
it works.
Well, band's not a sport, coach, but like I really felt like I was coaching.
Yeah,
you know, in the way that a lot of band people aren't as familiar with as athletics as I am because I'm such a sports fan, but. If you have ever played a sport, if you watch people coach, the way that I coach my kids and the way that a lot of my colleagues that I end up working with, especially in those Cedar Park years, coached our kids, worked with our kids, the way we were motivating them and inspiring them, we were trying to coach them up to be the best versions of themselves. Mm-hmm. The same way that a soccer coach or a football coach or a baseball coach tries to motivate their players to be the best versions of themselves and execute those things through reps and things. So I've always thought of myself as a coach also, educational person, and I worked really hard in that territory for a long time before realizing that, unfortunately, I don't work for the NFL as a wide receivers coach or a special teams coordinator. I work for a high school marching band.
Correct.
And I'm not going to pay the bills forever off of doing that. So I had to find other ways to do that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I was creative enough to start writing music and getting into that. So it's kind of how the transition happened.
So you said you use Logic?
Logic Pro, yeah.
Logic Pro, pardon
Logic
me.
Pro 10.
Like Logic Pro 10, there's a difference? Oh my bad, I'm an Ableton guy. What else do you use besides Logic?
I use some different sound libraries and mm-hmm. things.
What's your favorite sound library, synth library?
Anything from Output.
Oh, I've not heard of that, but again, I'm not in your business.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's great.
They, and I don't think a lot of people use them right now, so hopefully no one else downloads them because...
Are they going to cut you in if all of a sudden their sales like go through the roof?
Hopefully.
Oh my God. Somebody's told us about
it. Yeah. No, Output is awesome. They make some really cool stuff. That's the thing I think that I try to do. I try to sound unique. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people who do what I do. It's a big market. There's plenty of room, but I try to stand out by sounding a little bit different than everybody else.
What are some of the groups that you did that were in WGI that went to Dayton this year that, I or the audience might've remembered?
So I worked with United Percussion this past year.
Now, what was the show they did this past year?
It was a show about Beethoven.
That's the show that Richard Kearns was waxing poetic on.
Yeah.
Cool. What are the odds of that? We had both of you on here.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
And that was pretty cool to hear Richard talk about that. Mm-hmm. But that was cool for me. It was, so I grew up marching in United Percussion since I was like 15.
Really?
They were the local group. Wow. So I was in the, so quick background that will tie me into United Percussion.
Go for it.
I grew up in Philadelphia when I was a little kid. I lived in Southwest Philly.
Okay.
And then schools weren't amazing. So we moved across the river into New Jersey. Philadelphia, a lot of people don't know this, but Philadelphia is on the river, on the Delaware River, and right across from it is the state of New Jersey.
Oh.
Just like New Jersey's across from New York, or Kentucky's across from Cincinnati.
That's why people say that I'm going to go to New York for the night or something, right? You already right. train over there or something?
Yeah, it's only an hour and a half away.
Oh, my God. What's that like?
It's like going to San Antonio.
Oh, yeah. Very much like going to San Antonio. I'm sure let's go to New York. Let's go to San Antonio. The same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah.
They both have rivers. So when we lived in New Jersey, I lived really close to my high school, and there was the summer I would hear this marching band rehearsing up at my high school. Mm-hmm. And so I'd ride my bike up there, and it's like this drum corps called the Jersey Surf. And so they would host their home show at my, back when there was a lot more Division II corps, mm-hmm. as they were called back then, the open class, were. Division II and III.
Mm-hmm.
And they, Division II had a really big tour just like Division I did. And so Surf hosted their home show at my high school. And so when I was finally in my high school band, we would work the show, you mm-hmm. know, as hosts. And my mom signed me up for auditions without telling me. And so I went there November of 2000 for the 2001 summer and got cut because I was 14 and an idiot. Right. And probably not very good. And then made the corps in 2002. Surf had an indoor drumline as part of its organization called Riptide. Riptide and Surf.
Makes sense.
And Riptide, when Surf was ready to move on from Riptide, the folks from Riptide worked with the folks from another local group called Eagle Percussion, and they united together. They merged to form United Percussion. And so I was in United when it was Riptide, and then also United. I was there for 7 years.
Holy smokes.
I really did grow up in this group.
Right.
Because it's on the weekends. It's like 6 months out of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, so these were the people that kind of helped shape who I was.
Yeah.
And then we climbed up to the open class through my whole career. But before I aged out, I really wanted to get a world-class experience right. on the highest level. So I went to Rhythm X. Mm-hmm. And that's where my Rhythm X ties came from. But moving back to Philly, I got involved. I was at George Mason University for a year. Mm-hmm. And then last year, I went to United Percussion as their sound designer. And that was a cool experience for me. I learned a lot. And the group definitely had a challenging year in some ways. And so it was cool to help them with the knowledge that I picked up from other parts of the country to bring back to them. Because I think one of the problems that we have in the Philly area in pageantry is that we kind of are just kind of the same people. We don't really leave and come back. We don't really take mm-hmm. everything from other places to bring it back. It just kind of grows on itself. And that can be good in some ways. And I think in other ways, it hurts it. So it's been really cool for me to come back and bring some different ideas in. And part of that was that being the sound designer, I was going to work United and those kind of things. And this year, I'm running the front ensemble program and doing a little bit more. But to go back to your original question.
I don't even remember what my original question
what
was.
What groups at United?
Yes. Okay. Thank you for bringing that back,
Mike. Yeah, sure. So it's not United Percussion. Another group I'm really proud of is an A-class group that I do with Richard Kearns called Unionville.
What was the show? Did I see him? Did I like him? I think I did.
It was called Jane.
Go on.
And it had, it was about a girl who was lost in the woods, and the woods and the wilderness kind of were overtaking her, and she had to either choose to succumb to that and let it beat her or fight back and win.
Oh.
And she fights back and she wins. And she, like, we played the fight song. It was her fight song. And
I wanted, did I message you after that show?
You didn't. So I guess you didn't like it.
Well, there was, I know United.
Maybe you did.
He's going to pull out his tie. I could have sworn there was a show that I saw with you. I was like, oh, I really like this. But
I think,
but it was a small, but it was, I remember those.
I think,
and they made finals in A class?
I think they did make finals in A class.
Okay. And I watched all of
A-class finals. You did text me. I could look it up.
I saw you walking up with them or something. Yeah. I really enjoyed A-class finals.
I think A-class finals is underrated.
It is.
A lot of people don't attend. And I'm not trying to be like, you should go to A-class. I know people have other groups. And there's reasons they're not there. But if you ever have the opportunity, mm-hmm. there's a lot of great design and execution for those kids going on in A-class. Mm-hmm. You know, when as a designer, and it takes... I think A-class is the best place for people to learn how to design and teach because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. it makes you be a good designer, because if you don't, it just won't work, because the kids at the beginner level, they can't really lift you up the way that a world-class kid can save you.
Correct.
Just like coaching with football. If like the team is good, they can carry you a certain distance if the players are really good.
Right.
It's the same thing in WGI and I think DCI in a way. Like if the kids are just that good, if the drum corps is just that good, mm-hmm. the band's the drum line, it'll get you a certain distance.
Cowboys, right?
Shows things like the Cowboys.
Yeah, sure.
But A-class, it's all about what the adults do to set the kids up for excellence and success. And I think Unionville is a program from outside of the Philadelphia area, and they do a great job of that. It's a director named Cody Stafford, and he's awesome, and his team is really, really great, and they work their tails off to get these kids to do things. And he brings in Richard every year, and it's all Richard and I always have a great time together, kind of just going back and forth on that show. And you know, Richard's emotional shows that he does, he makes everybody cry or feel some kind of weird feelings. If you don't normally feel feelings, it's very uncomfortable. I feel feelings right now. I don't know what this is.
Yes.
So Jane was one of those shows where, you know, it was like, this girl's like, she's gonna be strong, you know, it's cool. And then you have other A-class shows like Josh went, and I think it's Unity Percussion. Uh-huh. They won Independent A this year.
Is that the pizza
yeah, show? Oh my God. Man, like, I went and found him on the floor after a retreat, and I gave him a big hug. I was like, dude, this is what A-class should be.
Right.
Yeah. Like, it was entertaining. It was good. And the kids got better and displayed beginner skill sets at a really high level.
Yes.
I mean, it was awesome. What more do you want from A-class? You
know, I
mean?
It was a lot of fun. I don't know if I had more fun watching the show or watching Josh wear that outfit for finals.
It was awesome.
It was awesome. It was awesome. Did he take his mugshot wearing his pizza uniform? Josh, come on the show.
Yeah, he needs to.
Michael, let's bring it back. Not to the Eagles, but let's bring it back to you.
Oh, God.
What inspires you?
Oh, man. Other people who are great at what they do inspire me. And what I mean by that is if I am feeling especially drained or uninspired, I will go turn on Netflix and watch something like Jiro Dreams of Sushi. Yeah. Or what's that?
Abstract.
Abstract Design. Yeah, the design.
That was on thing. Your Facebook.
Yeah, 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 Abstract. I will go back and watch these things. Or Chef's Table or something, and then just be like, oh yeah, like I can create for a living. I can do that. People will appreciate in some way what I do. That's my biggest fear always. And I don't know if you ever go through this, but you know, you're up, sometimes you pull some crazy hours trying to finish a chart or finish something that you're creating, and you send it off to the client and you're just like waiting for them to say something.
anything. Yeah.
Just if you hate it, just tell me you hate it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just exactly. Say anything. It's that kind of like, I just poured everything of who I am into this, and I'm really putting myself out there. And please, God, just say anything. And those are the I hate those moments. And those are the and when enough of those happen at once, I become uninspired.
Right.
I shut down. And so then I go back and I kind of look at other people who are great at what they do. And that inspires me. If you've never heard or seen this Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
And I have not.
J-I-R-O, Jiro.
Okay.
Jiro. It's a Japanese sushi chef, and he's got the best sushi place in the world.
Really?
3 Michelin stars.
Oh.
It's in a big deal. It's in a subway / mall building in Tokyo.
Okay.
I was in Tokyo in May, and I went there.
Humble brag.
And I looked in through the crack of the door, and I attempted to take a photo, even though it said no photos. And I saw him, and I got excited. And then they shut the door.
And they shut it real fast.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it's basically about how he takes the best, you know, only uses the best tuna and the best thing. And the people who make his rice take 2 years as an apprentice.
Wow.
Just to make a batch of rice. Like, it's that level.
Yeah.
Like, when he watches people eat sushi, like, he watches how they react and how they do everything. And then he adjusts as he goes. So basically, I'll give you the quick synopsis of it. I know we don't have a lot of time. Maybe we do.
We have as much time as we want.
Okay, cool. So you have to book it 3 months in advance.
Oh.
And it's usually around $300 or $400. And you only get, I don't know, 10 pieces of sushi or something.
Okay.
But it's the finest sushi in the world. The people who pick the fish for him go to the Tokyo fish market, and they only get like the best, like 0.001% of the fish. If it's not good enough, they don't serve that fish that day. If the tuna that came in isn't up to his standard, they don't have tuna that day. Like, that kind of thing. He won't give in to quality, which is what you hear a lot about a lot of places, but this is pretty real. And if he puts sushi out for you, he puts it out like, you know, like in front of you on the, you sit at a bar and he's there and he makes each one and like, and he puts it out there and he like slides it in front of you. If you reach for your chopsticks with your left hand, he'll serve you the sushi backwards the next time. Cause he thinks about how you pick it up and how it enters your mouth, like in a certain direction. Like, it's like, he's very like almost maniacal about it, but he's like a sweet, sweet 95-year-old Japanese man.
Jeez.
Who's like bent over and like, you know, his eyes are closed and he can't see anything. And he's like making this crazy sushi.
Yeah.
So, he inspires me, the Abstract Design people.
Yeah.
And that series, that inspires me. So actually, there's this Instagram account I follow, Angelo's Pizzeria South Philly. It's this dude, Angelo.
Reminds me of the Office episode where they were talking about, was it Pizza by Angelo? Angelo's? Anyway, so.
Well, his name is Angelo. It's Daniel, but his place is called Angelo's. And I think it's Daniel or David. Daniel. And he, like, so typical Philly pizza shop or Northeast pizza shop, East Coast pizza shop is they serve sandwiches. We call them hoagies.
That's correct.
As well as pizza. And, you know, that's cold cuts and red peppers and cheese and things. He makes all of it from scratch. So he's at his shop opens at noon every day. He's there at 4 a.m. And he's mixing the dough to make the pizza dough, and the pizza dough rises. He's rolling the rolls. He's getting the dough and he's rolling it up and he's seeding it and he's slicing it and he's baking it in his oven. He's mixed the flour. He's mixed everything from scratch. None of the produce is frozen. It comes from local farmers and he chops everything up. And like, it is the best pizza, and like hoagies, and some of the best in the city. And there's other pizza places that are as good or better or comparable. Mm-hmm. I can talk about pizza forever. The Philly pizza scene is strong.
Oh,
Pizzeria Badia was named the best pizza in America a number of years ago by Bon Appetit magazine. And there's Pizza Shack of Maxon, which is the best slice in Philly. That's right by my place. It's incredible. Anyway, Angelo's South Philly, he does everything from scratch. And it's like, so I'll see his Instagram and I'm just like, his story, and I'm just like, man, like I can crank like that on my stuff too.
Right.
Like I can commit to quality and commit to like serving people. And he always talks about how when you own a business, you think you're not going to work because you have all these people that work for you. But really it's the opposite. You work harder than everybody else.
Right.
And that's what I have to tell myself a lot of times is I run my own business. So I have to work harder than everybody else who also does what I do, you know, and just try to like be in the game a little bit.
Now you mentioned the word crank. Do you have to give money to Josh Gwent for saying that or what?
No, that belongs to Jason Robb.
Wait, Jason Robb's the original cranker?
He's the mayor of Crank City.
The mayor of Crank City?
It says that on a placard in his office.
It does
says
not.
Jason Robb, mayor of Crank City. I'm sure it was a gift from a student or something, but
Jason Robb, come on the show.
Yeah.
Michael, what has been the most rewarding project thus far in your career?
There've been a couple. The most rewarding. There's different ones that are rewarding in different ways. So like winning a world championship at Carolina Crown was like one of the greatest feelings of my entire life because I grew up loving drum corps. I was this kid from a small high school in New Jersey. We had like 40 kids in the band, 60 kids in the band. Like we were so tiny. Mm-hmm. We were not very good. But for me to be able to climb like that, like it really just felt like I had arrived, you know, and it felt really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really mean anything as you go through it. It's like, okay, cool, like right. Whatever, no one cares, you know. Dotson, we got Dotson here.
Yeah, that's right.
See, nobody cares. Nice hat, you know what I mean?
A Jurassic Park reference for all the millennials out there.
So it feels like Dotson sometimes. And it's like, it's the Super Bowl of marching band. Like
it is,
like we have a ring. And my sister-in-law's boyfriend works for the Philadelphia Eagles, and he has a real Super Bowl ring.
Oh.
The family cares a lot more about his Super Bowl ring.
Probably.
And that's okay, because I'm a realist. Like, football is bigger than band. Yeah. But like to be on that stage and mm-hmm. win on that level, it was really rewarding. But also, like, more emotionally, kind of my heart is full rewarding, was the 2016 Cedar Park season. We went to Grand Nationals, mm-hmm. and when I first moved to Cedar Park, Evan Van Doren talked me into coming down here.
Is that the pumpkin show?
That was the pumpkin show that I'm referencing. But when I first came down here, Evan said, stay here for 1 year. If you hate it, you can always leave. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, so 1 year. And then during that year, I was like, well, I think we might go to Grand Nationals next year. I was mm-hmm. like, oh man, I've always wanted to take a band. Like, I worked in Ohio and I've gone to Grand Nationals with bands, but to be on finals night with your band and be competitive, mm-hmm. that was always like kind of a thing that I really wanted to do with high school kids. And we ended up not going that year. We ended up not going for 6 years, but I kept baiting my wife, Kelsey, to stay down here with us, like with me, not to like, she was going to leave me, but like just one more year. I wanted to get through Grand Nationals. And so, 2016, we did the All Hallows Eve show, which was great. And that season was a climb, and that front ensemble program, I had built that up from it was kind of small when I got there. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been going through change, and Jordan Garza was there before me. He did a great job with them. And he does a great job now at Weiss High School. I got to take that program and kind of even elevate it a little bit more and lift it up. And I had these kids that even as sophomores, like I would argue that they were one of the, you know, top 4, 5, 6 pits in the country that year. And I was really, really proud of their work. And I'll remember this moment for the rest of my life. Like, they had, I'm really into like all parts of everything, all parts of the execution. Like, okay, are the kids like living in the moment the right way? Are they enjoying themselves? Mm-hmm. And also, are they playing perfect or not? Like, it's got to be right. And they had, I mean, I was there. And I really wanted them to have like the perfect run that you say they don't have. And I could like, and so when I watched the show, like I'm looking for ticks, yeah, I'm looking for mistakes, even at finals, because I wanted to know if it was going to be real because they were that close mm-hmm. and they did it. I couldn't find a mistake in the show. Mm-hmm. And I was just like on top of the world. And then we got up to the top of the tunnel and this student, she turned to me and she just like, she jumped and just released this energy. I get goosebumps thinking about it. She's like, that was the most fun thing I've ever done. That was awesome. She mm-hmm. screamed that. And I was just like moved by that. And I was like, that was really cool. Like, and we ended up climbing. We got, I think, fifth that year in BOA Grand Nationals. That's about right. Yeah. I was like, what? You know, that was like really cool to be up there with Carmel, Avon, Broken Arrow, Tarpon Springs mm-hmm. and us. And it was just like, man, this is pretty incredible. So that was heartwarming. And those, that group, that those pick kids, those 20 kids or so, it was a pretty big group. Like they're really special to me. Especially the kind of the girls in the marimba line that I had. I had six girls in the marimba line, and they were like all just like badasses. Mm-hmm. They were just animals. And I stayed in contact with them after I left. They're all in college now and doing great. And it's just been really cool. And they've been really, it's been really rewarding. And we went through some stuff that season. There was a loss in the family for one of them. One of them really closely, really suddenly in a really sad way. And so I remember being on the band field and we told the band that this person had passed, and the kids jumped up and this was a stadium rehearsal at Gupson Stadium, and all their family was there, and all the kids ran to me and not their family. And I was just like a really like, whoa, like I'm really affecting these kids mm-hmm, by mm-hmm. what I do and say. And that was like, I always held that kind of special to me, to my heart, like knowing that when you coach kids like that, when you believe in them, and they know that you love them, they will love you back. And that was always a really cool feeling. And some of my most inspired teaching and most inspired times of my life were when I got to stand in front of those groups of kids. Because when you put yourself into them, when you really let yourself go in front of them and give them everything you've got and they give it back to you, it's like a really special connection. Mm-hmm. And so I always cherish that.
That's a hell of an answer. What is the last piece of music you've listened to, Mike?
I was just talking to someone about this today. I don't get to listen to enough music. Like, not to avoid your answer, and I'll come back around with something good. But I so much of my time, like, you know, you write music. Like,
thank you.
Sorry.
Mahler makes his daily appearance on the podcast drinking water very loudly.
Just lapping it. I have to spend so, like, people who work on like spreadsheets for a living or whatever they do, they can have music on in the background all day, mm-hmm. but we can't do that.
That's right. Yeah.
Like because we have to listen to what we're doing.
Correct.
And it's like, it's just, that's probably the part about my job that I don't like the most. Cause I just want to listen to music mm-hmm. that I like,
right.
Not like music for work. Someone asked me today, like, do you use Spotify or Apple Music? And my answer is I use Spotify for me mm-hmm. and Apple Music for work.
Yeah.
Because I don't want my algorithms to like cross streams. Like,
can't cross the streams.
No, man. Apple Music. Because if I put on Apple Music like weekly playlists, it's going to be like a mixture of like Guard soundtrack music and like drum corps stuff. Like, no.
Yeah.
You know, so I got back. I'm a big, I go through phases. I like, not to be like, I like everything, but I like everything. Okay. My most recent phase this week was like Ed Sheeran what was I listening to? Singer songwriter stuff, mm-hmm. like jam stuff. Ed Sheeran, James Bay. Sorry, James Bay is awesome. I'm blanking out because I got the mic in front of me. Ed Sheeran, James Bay, those kind of things I've listened to recently. But I also love Zedd. Everyone knows I'm a big Zedd fan.
That is correct.
Jason Robb has a piano in his house.
Oh,
and my wife is over, and we were hanging out, and show me to play the piano. So I play like a bunch of Ben Folds music. I love Ben Folds. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I like everything.
Right on.
I was playing some Dr. Dre on the piano.
That is the one Dr. Dre. Bleep, bleep,
bleep, bleep, come on. Bleep, the one bleep, thing you can play the piano.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I really do listen to everything. I love West Coast hip hop. Oh. I love East Coast hip hop.
What?
I love singer songwriter music. I love classical music. I love movie soundtracks. I love everything.
Why didn't you mention Third Coast hip hop? The H. What about Southern hip hop? The A.
Houston Rockets.
God.
Like Beyonce.
Houston Rockets. What is your most prized material possession?
I don't know that I have one. I don't know. I'm so bad at these answers.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, you are.
Like, obviously, like, I use my iPhone like too many hours a day because I have to.
Right. Yeah.
So that I would like, I would be upset if I lost that because like, oh my gosh, I don't like love it. Right. I don't care about it. I love my iPad. I don't love it. You know, I don't realize because I need to use it for work.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say what my most prized possession is. Not to be cheesy, but I do love that I have a drum corps ring. Like, that's pretty awesome. You know,
the Super Bowl of music.
Man, yeah. I mean, I don't really have a ton. I don't have any. I can't think of anything material that if I lost couldn't be replaced. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I look at things. Like, if there was something that was it, if it was gone forever, I'd be pretty disappointed, but I don't know what that is. I don't really have anything like
not
that.
Not like Evan, who said AirPods. Can you believe that?
I mean, they are a game changer. When you when you start taking phone calls on AirPods, it's the best thing ever.
It is. It really is.
It's like, come on. It's awesome.
Yes.
So I do love my AirPods and use them very frequently.
Yeah, very good. When did you realize that you were good or that you knew what you were doing?
Am I?
You're on the podcast. I don't get losers on here, Mike.
Fair enough. I at Cedar Park, not to go back to that either, but it was really cool. I respect everybody down in Texas like big time because these are like these players, the people who play music down here are incredible. And I remember I remember my first lesson at Cedar Park High School was actually at Cedar Park Middle School in seventh grade, a seventh grader who went on to the program and she's off at college now. But and it was the first day of lessons, first day of school, and I was like, or second day of school, and I said, okay, so why don't you take out your four mallet music. You're doing four mallets now, right? Like thinking, oh, she's in seventh grade. Like surely she can't really play anything. Mm-hmm. And she pulled out a piece that I auditioned in college with. I was like, oh my God, these kids are crazy. And then like that later on that day, a kid was like, I was like, so what are you working on? Percussion ensemble. Oh, Crown of Thorns. I'm having trouble with this marimba part. And he was like, and I was like, okay. You know, so like the kids here are incredible. They push you to be better. The colleagues that I were around pushed me to be better. And it was those days where we'd have barbecue Wednesdays on Mondays or whatever.
Monday night barbecue on Wednesdays.
Yeah, those things.
On Mondays.
On Mondays. And I would come into the room and people like Rick Rodriguez would be like, dude, you are killing it right now. And I'm like, no, really? It's like, it's pretty good. And then I would kind of be like, oh, I guess this is going pretty well, you know, and those kind of things felt good. Mm-hmm. Or when I would be writing something and someone like would email me back or be like, dude, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, really? Like, this is really, really awesome. I write for and work at Westchester University, just outside of Philly where I attended college. And getting a call to write for them was like pretty humbling because a lot of people don't know this. I didn't actually graduate from college.
What?
How could that be?
How
can you go on in your life?
Oh, my Lord.
Ugh. So I left school. I think about it like this. I knew that I wanted to do what I'm doing right now back then. I had this vision and dream of doing this. And so I knew that being a music ed major wouldn't get me there. I knew that being a music composition major necessarily wouldn't get me there. Mm-hmm. I needed some kind of mix of everything. And so I thought about, you know, Tim Ferriss talks about this on one of his podcasts, maybe, or somewhere in his book about... you could go to school and spend $100,000 on a business degree, or you could spend that money working to try an apprentice with like business minds.
Yeah.
I thought about like that. That's one of the reasons why I moved to Ohio to do Rhythm X. It was like, I need to go do this and be out there and learn from these people. And then when the Texas opportunity came up, I need to go there and be down here and learn from these people because this is what I'm putting my life into to get this out of it. Would be the equivalent of me going to school for some kind of degree that that doesn't exist for what I do.
Right.
And so that's what I did. So when the school that I dropped out from called me to say, hey, we really want you to write music for us, that felt pretty cool.
Yeah.
And they're always really happy with what I do. And that just feels really good.
Yeah.
And there's, anytime a program lets me know that they like what I do, like we talked about earlier, I'm on cloud nine. I feel amazing. So I don't think there was any one particular moment where I was like, yo, I'm pretty good. It was just like, okay, I think this is starting to go better. Like people are starting to like what I'm doing. Maybe it was something similar for you, but I definitely feel like there was this kind of growth that happened gradually where it's like, okay, I'm starting to feel a little more comfortable with what I'm doing. People are starting to kind of cold call me out of nowhere to write for them. Like, okay. It's not just like, I've never worked with you anywhere before. And you want me to write? Like, that's kind of cool. You know? So that was one of those things.
Who is your favorite designer of all time? It can be show, music, visual, drill, however you want to label designer.
Man, I'm so unprepared with names for this podcast.
everybody is that has taught you or worked with you is waiting for you to say their name. And if they don't, they have their phones ready to go.
I can tell. Well, I think of designer as like so many things.
Correct.
So I think for front ensemble stuff, obviously I worked with, most people know this, I worked with a ton with Andrew Markworth. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So he's probably been the most influential designer in my life because I learned a lot about front ensemble arranging from him. I just don't write a lot exactly like him because we're different people, but yeah. I learned a lot about the principles of that from him. And I'm still learning from other people that I work with, but he learned a lot from Eric Johnson. So I'd say Eric Johnson really, really inspired. And Eric is kind of like the godfather of the modern front ensemble in a way.
Correct.
And I owe a lot to what I do, to what Eric did. Mm-hmm. And, anytime Eric and I have a conversation, we talk kind of about that a little bit, and we talk a little bit about like where it came from, what he did with it, where it's at now, how mm-hmm. things are different, and those are always really fun conversations. But Andrew and Eric Johnson, obviously Michael Gaines has always inspired me, like so many other people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Anyway, Ray Ames is a designer that I've always loved, like the Ames chair guy. Yep. I've always appreciated the kind of mid-century modern designers. Because those people shaped the way that so many things in our life work. Like the iPhone comes from a place of whatever these guys did in the 60s and 70s. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like these people would like design coffee pots and toasters, but like they designed them with care, mm-hmm. you know, or they designed an armchair, but they designed it with care. And those things always inspire me. That's kind of stuff that's on that abstract of design mm-hmm, show. Mm-hmm. You know, so. As far as back to the pageantry world, Michael Klesch has always been incredible. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But he's always more of a stick to the original kind of guy, which I always appreciated. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. his work is very influential.
Agreed.
Let's see. If there was someone else in this room that has been a designer.
Mahler has been responsible for a lot of creations in this house.
No, man. I mean,
outside.
I always appreciated what you bring to the pageantry world. And I'm not just saying that because I'm on your podcast. I'm supposed to, but
I appreciate it. Thank you.
I have this great memory of you when I first got down here. You were working on a Top Gun show.
One of my greatest shows of all time.
And I was just like, man, Daniel is not afraid to be himself. And I love that about you. And I'll tell you this quick story about Ronald Reagan 2005 you might appreciate.
I'm ready.
At that time I was living at Westchester. I was going to school. Mm-hmm. And, I had a friend who lived across the hall from me, who was marched across with that in 2005. Mm-hmm. And the news had just dropped that some high school band in Texas bought the Crossman.
Right.
That's what he says.
Like, yeah.
Some band in Texas bought the Crossman. I was like, what? He goes, yeah, Ronald Reagan High School. They're a BOA band. And I was like, what's BOA? Because back in that time in New Jersey, BOA hadn't made it to the East Coast yet.
Right.
It was like in the Midwest and South and whatever, but not really in the East Coast. And I was like, what's BOA? He's like, dude, Bands of America. I was like, I never heard of it. And he's like, well, let's look up. He like typed in a YouTube video like BOA, BOA champion 2005 or BOA something 2005.
Yeah.
And he's like, up pops this high school. Now, I'm from the East Coast. I've never seen a high school marching band, not from like New Jersey or Pennsylvania.
Right.
Ever in my life. I'm 19 years old. And I was like, this band is on. I'm like, that's a drum corps. He's like, no, it's a marching band. I was like, no, there's like too many people. I was like, no, dude, that's a Texas marching band. And there was like this drill happening. And there was like these, what was the movie?
Love Actually? Wait, well, what show are you talking about?
No, it was the movie with like the nerdy dude, the curly hair.
He's like Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah,
oh, the quote.
There was a Napoleon Dynamite quote in the show, and I was like, what?
Shout out Aaron Guidry.
Yeah, dude. I was like, that's awesome. And I was like, this is a high school marching band? And my buddy was like, yeah, man, like this is what it is. And they just bought the Crossman. I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I was talking about that, but oh no. And then I came to find out that you worked there at that time.
With Rolando Chavez. Yeah.
And I was just like, really? And that just always stuck with me, man. So I always appreciate that. Your personality. Yeah. Shout out to Pulling Dynamite. Shout out Ronald Reagan High School. Shout out 2005. The year, just shout out to that year.
Yeah. That's a good year in general.
I always just appreciated what you brought to the table. That's from your awesome. Creativity.
I appreciate that. You're the first one to give me a compliment on my podcast. Well, so thanks, Mike.
Yeah.
Hey, who is one designer or performer or teacher that we should be listening to right now?
Ooh, that's a really good, I like that you asked that.
Thank you.
That's a really, really good question because when I was younger, I would have loved for someone to give me a shout out because I was trying so hard to make it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no one ever did.
Man.
And I should be very prepared for this answer.
Yeah, you're excited about this question, but then like, oh, I don't really have an answer.
I mean, Evan Van Doren is doing great things. Not that, I mean, come on. I guess, has he already made it?
Look, you can't be the new arranger for the Vanguard.
True. You know who I'll shout out? A really, really good friend of mine who does excellent work and isn't as popular as he should be. It's this guy named Lee Allman.
Okay.
Lee Allman runs the front ensemble at Avon High School. Okay. He also writes for, I think, Union.
In Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. And he does great work. He does great work on design, and not enough people know about Lee. Lee's really, really good.
There we go. Look at him, her.
Lee. Lee's him.
Gotcha. I don't want to assume anyone's gender.
Sure. Lee, him and I taught the Carolina Crown together, and we taught the Crossman together. I think he's still at the Crossman.
Wow.
We taught Rhythmix together. He's at Rhythmix as well. He's a really, really good friend of mine, and he does great work.
I know this will be a biased answer from you, but in a lot of ways, Star of Indiana is kind of like the most influential tree when it comes to brass. Because it's extended far beyond. Most people equate it now with Carolina Crown, but it seems like everyone now has a taste of Crown, which is from the Star of Indiana tree. Yeah. Rhythmix seems to be that version in percussion. It doesn't seem like you can go anywhere at this point and find a successful marching band, drum corps, indoor drumline that doesn't have some sort of roots in Rhythmix. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, Tim Fairbanks, Tim Jackson, Andrew Markworth, obviously they're really good at what they do. And Tim Fairbanks and I have talked about this before. They were definitely in the right place at the right time to catch that lightning in the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Opportunity to prove that they are good.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, that attracted a lot of us to them, you know, who are were inspired by what they do, who wanted to learn from them and grow from them, and then go out like I did back to my roots and kind of bring my stuff there. I'd say that is for sure an influence in the especially WGI world. I'd say for front ensembles in general, the Cavaliers of the early 2000s.
Again, Eric Johnson.
They really just changed the way that a front ensemble could be included in the music composition and construction. The way that it changed the way we call it the athletic approach to front ensemble. It wasn't like we're going to play concert marimba out in the field and just kind of be like dainty and whatever.
Yeah.
We're going to, because they were the Cavaliers, they would say kind of, we're going to be men and do this. You know what I mean? I think the way that I would look at it now is that we're going to be strong people with strong, strong attitude and tenacity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to be tenacious about what we do, about our approach. We're going to be athletic. We're not going to sit on the backside.
Right.
We're going to get up on the balls of our feet. We're going to play these things, and you're going to hear us, and we're going to be present. We're not just going to be dumping ground for like the sax player who can't walk anymore, or like the kid who can't pass his class. They're not going to be dumping grounds. And that was a part of the culture that I tried to change when I got to Cedar Park. Not that it was that bad, but it was like, no. Like, we're not going to dump kids here. Like, these are kids who earn this position.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to instill that into everywhere I go. I got to talk about that with Tim Hinton on a webinar one time. And that my whole thing was like, as I've left teaching every day, and I start to consult a lot more, and I go to these programs, the front ensemble is so much a place for like just misfits and all these things, which is okay.
Sure.
But what an opportunity to turn those kids into the most badass kids in the group. I'll be able to say it to my pit kids. It's like, we're going to be the best section of the bands, period. And everything that we're going to be the cool kids.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to want to be in the pit after we're done.
You know what I
mean? And not a lot of people do that, but I think people who come from the Cavaliers kind of like branch, not that I march the Cavaliers, I was influenced by people who did, people who taught there. And Rhythmix crosses into that quite a bit because they were all from that same approach too. I mean, Andrew was a Cavalier, the front ensemble came from that approach too. So it all kind of mixes together. It's that Midwest approach, which when you say anything else Midwest, I'm like, that's soft. But the Midwest percussive approach is pretty tenacious and aggressive, which I love.
I would agree with the front ensemble thing. When I was at Reagan, it wasn't that way. You didn't just put the kids in there. But I think in a lot of ways, in the early 2000s, people wanted to be like in the Reagan pit, in the Tarpon Springs pit, in the Westfield pit, because all the cool stuff in the band was happening from the pit.
Yeah, man.
Because of electronics and sound effects and stuff. And then now, I mean, you still look at the Reagan pit. You can look at the Vandergriff pit. You can look at Cedar Park. You can look at Rick Rodriguez, Cedar Ridge. Like, I've always said to me, it's like, you know, one of those like, hey, y'all are the best musicians in the entire band because you're going to have to do all of these things and do all of these and blah, 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 blah. And pit kids are weird, and I think they'll tell you that, but they really kind of just like Yes, like we're the yeah. pitches. Like yeah. we're going to do this. And so I love front ensemble. It's my yeah, favorite. Even though I never was in a front ensemble, I only really want to ever teach front ensemble, though I don't teach anymore. Sure. But we shouldn't forget that it took Richard Saucedo and what Eric and Brett Kuhn were doing
sure.
to give those windows. And I'm not taking away anything from Eric, but
no, you're right.
The books that Richard was writing allowed those Absolutely. Moments because Absolutely. There were front ensemble moments, but not like what they sure. started doing.
I mean, I think about like the Blue Devils 2000.
Yes.
Like uh-huh. that was like, as a Pit kid, that was one of the first drum corps, big boy drum corps I ever saw.
Yeah.
Like, and I remember seeing them at a Giant Stadium rehearsal in 2000, and then they played that, and I was just like, oh my God.
Right. And that, they had, didn't they go to Japan that summer?
Did they?
Well, that's the Herman show, right? The Herman?
Methods of Madness.
Methods of Madness. Yeah. And I think they went to Japan.
And they came back still.
And they came back and got third, right? But that Acello Rondo? Yeah, I remember going like... Yeah, that was still Jeff Lee back then, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Jeff Lee's another one.
Yeah, man. Yes, yes. His influence on the West Coast was huge. Yeah. Huge. And so... sure, there was an opportunity in that window mm-hmm. there. And mm-hmm. I think you're right. Richard Saucedo and Brett and Eric.
Richard's a percussionist too.
Yeah. Oh, that's yeah. pretty cool. I never knew that.
Yeah. Another percussion arranger, band director, Latino.
So there's hope for us out there.
There is. If not band, Mike, what else would you be doing?
I think about this all the time. I love Jude's answer, by the way, about just getting paid to travel the world. Cause that's what I want to do.
Yeah. Who wouldn't?
If I think about this, there's two ways to think about this. One of them is like, if I had to do work every day,
right.
Or if you've read the 4-Hour Work Week book,
which I have not,
but Tim Ferriss, you would like this a lot.
Oh my God.
You okay. really, I mean, I'm serious. You really All should right. read this.
Okay. I will.
It's about, kind of, I hate this word, hacking your life.
Life hack.
Yeah. I hate They're not life hacks. They're life tips. Hack.
Yeah.
It's a tip.
Yeah.
Here's a tip.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's a tip. Try this. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
No, it's a life hack. But it's about taking your life and finding a way to automate it mm-hmm. so that you only have to work 4 hours in a week.
Mm.
Now, in order to do that, you have to have something that you're selling or some kind of product or something that's moving right. that you don't have to tend to.
Gotcha.
But I would probably want to set my life up in that way and then just do whatever I want. If I didn't never get around to doing that and I was doing something else, I have this kind of dream of just owning like a little pizza shop on a corner in a city and just like, that's my world. Like I come to work every day uh-huh. and I make pizza or I bake or something, sure. some kind of artisan profession on a really small scale. And I just have the locals in my neighborhood that come in and I just make stuff and I'm like the bread maker or I'm the pizza maker or something. And I'm just like, and I do that one job really, 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 really well.
That's like all you sell.
Right.
That.
And I just, and I'm like the best at it in the city. That's all I do. Or maybe the country. That's why I think those things like that Jiro Dreams of Sushi. Mm-hmm. That's why I think it inspires me so much. It's like, I want to do that in a way. Like yeah. I kind of want to. I also obviously don't because it's not what I do.
Right.
But there's a part of me that like just fantasizes in a romantic way about how cool that could be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When have you felt the most starstruck?
I guess right when I aged out of drum corps and I started working with people that were like legends to me when I was marching. I have this story that I tell all the time about the first time I ever tried a beer that I liked.
All right.
So here's what I mean. When I, you know, when you're like in college, you might partake in some things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I never liked beer. I would try it and I would like spit it out. I thought it was gross.
Mm-hmm.
So I got hired at the Blue Stars like the day after I aged out. And I was at my first Blue Stars camp and Tom Onks and Neil Larrabee had just left the cadets and they were... that was back when drum corps used to have their banquets at the November camp. That was really common back in the
day. Oh, that's right.
Now they all do them finals week because it makes more sense, but we used to do them in November. So we're at this banquet at the first camp on Friday night and none of us had worked there before. So it was like very weird
mm-hmm.
sitting in on their celebration of their season that we weren't a part
sure,
of.
Sure, yeah.
So at this banquet, there was a bar in the back and Tom turned to everybody and he goes, you guys want to get a beer? I'm like, yeah, sure. And Tom probably doesn't remember this at all, but we walked over and he turned to me and goes, you want a beer? And I was like, yes. You know, like just 22 and starstruck because this is Tom Monks. Like he's been around for 25 years or whatever, yeah. and he's the man. He did the cadets and whatever. And he hands me like a Bud Light, and I was just like, I don't want to do this. But I drank it, and I was like, I got through it, and I was the first. And that was my gateway to like trying beer, like and trying to appreciate what it was. He also got me my very first coffee ever, too, that I enjoyed. So I had tried coffee over the years. And again, coffee is an acquired taste, and I just wasn't into it. And then it was like the morning of Allentown that year, and he rolled up, and he was like, I got you coffee with like cream and sugar. And I was like, okay. And I drank it. I was like, okay, I can drink this.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say no. It's Tom Hawks.
Yeah. You know? Right.
Yeah. And those were those moments like these, they just, it was very casual to them. Again, they probably, Tom probably doesn't remember this, but he just kind of handed it to me. And I was like, you know, and after that summer, I kind of realized, oh wait, everybody's just, they're just people. They all get up in there and put their pants on one thing at a time. Like I do, you know, it's not a big deal.
Right. Right.
It's also kind of funny. Jude said this on your, on his podcast too. It reminds me when you see, like, just like he said, you know, when a band director was working with their music arranger, Martha Graham was trying to get her music, you know, like, it's like that kind of motivates me in a way. It's sometimes whenever I go to California, I get inspired by show business out there because it's like, they're not doing anything different than what I'm doing.
No,
I just made the mistake maybe of choosing to do it for a lot less money because I'm working with kids, which is like inspiring in its own way, but I could do that.
Sure.
And part of me still wants to do that. And I kind of gravitate to that thing. If I was out there, I would probably be really starstruck.
Right.
By all these people.
Almost as much as you are right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you're sitting across from me.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. If you could take a lesson with anybody, who would it be?
I would take a music production lesson with Zed.
Oh, yeah. That's a.
I want to go into his studio and see what the heck he's doing. And Zed, I mean, you know, it's EDM, it's dance music.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I feel like I have a couple of friends. We call Zed hashtag real musician because he's a classically trained piano player and you can hear that in his music, like his chord progressions,
right?
Like he's not just doing like CFGC, you know, like 1-4-5-1 or 2-5-1 or whatever. He's like he writes dance songs that exist in two keys at once.
Oh wow.
You know what I mean? Like there's depth to his music,
right?
You know what I'm saying? And the harmony and the melody and all that stuff and the form. So I would love to sit in with him and just have him teach me everything. But also, there's these, have you heard of this masterclass online thing? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I get ads for that sent to me because of the great algorithm.
Correct. Yes.
All the time. And I'm like, man, like, I don't even eat barbecue, but I want to watch Franklin make barbecue.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Or I want to watch like Aaron Sorkin write on his masterclass. Because it's just like, I love seeing people be really good at what they do.
Right.
So
I agree with that. What's your worst habit?
There's this great stand-up comedian who talks about the procrastination monkey. It's like where like it I won't do the joke justice, but it's like he says there's like a monkey on his back that won't let him work. And that's my hardest thing that I deal with on a day-to-day basis is distraction and procrastination. Not because I don't want to get the work done, but because I'll be like, oh, I need to send an email to this person about this. Okay, their email asked me to do this thing. Okay, let me look this thing up. And next thing I know, 20 minutes later, I'm looking at like the migration patterns of like humpback whales,
right,
like in the North Arctic. And I'm fascinated by it. And then I'm like, oh my God, an hour and a half just went by.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
You know? And like, that's the struggle that I work through every day of my life. Like my brain is firing 24/7 and it's like crazy. And so for me to focus is really hard. And so what I'm trying to do to counteract that is try to find ways to automate and micromanage some of the things in my life with in different ways that allow me to do things, change some of my habits. Like I've turned off notifications on my phone for the most part. That's been big, especially email notifications. I try to, when I wake up in the morning, I try to not check my email or check anything and just go to work and knock something out first. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes it doesn't, you know? I found that when I bought a standing desk that converts.
Yeah.
I find that I get more work done when I'm standing than when I'm sitting. So I try to do that if I can. Different things.
Wow. Yeah. What is your life's motto?
Everything always.
Oh, you've thought about this.
Yeah. Well, it's what I try to teach to my kids when I teach them. Do all of the things all the time. How you do anything is how you do everything. I'm not perfect at that. I'm chasing perfection with that. You know, I was late to us here today.
That is correct.
And you text me back stock. And I was like, but it's not though. Like I'm not a late person, but you know, that's the right answer because here I am, I'm late. But,
yeah, especially cause you were texting me 2 hours ago.
It was so funny. I used the Waze app. Are you familiar?
I am familiar with Waze.
I put your address in. I set a reminder for a time to leave. As I stood up to start gathering my things, I said time to go. I stood up to start gathering my things. And my phone started blowing up about this project I'm working on. And I was like texting furiously through it.
Both works.
Yeah. And like I'm trying to just get everyone off my back so I can drive.
Yeah.
Without like things bothering me. Again, this distraction thing.
Yes.
And I look at my watch and it's 10:50 and I wanted to leave at like 10:26 and I'm like,
Oh man.
And then I didn't text you till I was at a red light at like 11:05.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's all right. It's all right. What advice would you offer to your 18-year-old self?
Chill. Dude, chill. It's okay. It's going to be fine. Just chill. You're doing the right thing. Just chill. Maybe don't talk as much. Just maybe talk like 1% of the amount that you talk now. I used to be just a hot-headed, just fire things off kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to really, 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 really work hard to listen more than I speak. And I'm still not perfect at it, but I try really hard to do that. And when I was 18, like a lot of 18-year-olds, I knew everything.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I had it all figured out. Yeah. It was going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go back and say, dude, just chill. Like, just chill. Listen to the people around you. Stay on your path. Don't do the stupid stuff you're about to do, which was a lot of stupid stuff.
Right, right.
But, you know, you learn from those things too, right? I mean, I was just talking to this with my wife the other day. It's like, she's the kind of person where you're like, don't touch that, it's hot. And she goes, okay. And she'll never touch it.
Whoa.
If you say, no, it cooled off, you can touch it. No, she goes, no, I can't. It's hot. You said it was hot once. I am like, really?
Yeah, like, it's not that hot.
Okay, that was hot. Or, oh, it's not too hot. She'd be like, exactly. How do you know? I'm like, because I touched it. You're not supposed to touch it. Yeah, but I did.
It's right, hot. Yeah.
So I am like, it's like kind of the learn the hard way.
Right.
But I think for a lot of people, it's kind of learn, I don't want to say the right way, but it's the most impactful way to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you are the kind of person that learns from just one person saying to you one time not to or to do something,
mm-hmm.
I still think experiencing that bad thing makes you learn deeper. And so that's kind of what I go through a lot.
Right. Well, I would agree with a great deal of what you just said. Mike, how are you doing in our fantasy football league this year?
Well, this is one of six leagues I'm in.
Oh, gosh.
Because I can't say no. It's always like, it's like that 2 week of period in August where everyone's like drafting.
Right.
Someone's like, dude, we draft tomorrow. We need like one more guy. Can you do it? I'm like, how much is it? Like $20 or free. Like, okay, fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then now here I am in six leagues. In some leagues, I'm undefeated.
Some.
But in the Austin Powers.
That's right.
Which I've been a strong member of since 2012.
You're OG, man.
I am OG AP, baby.
What's really funny about it is we thought you and Evan were going to like run the league because y'all, it seemed like y'all knew what you were doing. Y'all talked a big game.
Well, and we had a Cedar Park league going and we watched the league TV show on FX. Because
it was on at the time.
Oh, that show. That was one of my all time favorite comedies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like we were living that show all the time. And so it was like, yeah, we got there and I did do well first couple of years.
Yeah. You competed for the championship in year two and three, for sure.
At least
like
twice, maybe three times.
Yeah.
I lost to either you or Katie Leander.
That's correct.
Every time.
Yeah.
But I was always in the running.
Yeah.
This year, however, not going great.
Is it the Van Doren curse?
I don't know what it is, but it's not going well. I'm just, my fingers are crossed that I don't win the Howie Vandell.
That is correct. Nobody wants to win that.
No.
Well, I'd say nobody, but Mike Howard and Katie have won it so many times. You think they do want
it? Yeah, it felt a lot like they were into it.
They really, I think they enjoy it. They get their names on trophies. It's like Mike goes, he goes, look, I pay my $40, I get a shirt and get a trophy at the end of the year. It's like, you know, great. It's like, that's a good attitude, that's fair. Mike. Yeah,
I like it.
No. He can't win everything. Yeah. I mean, my God, Honor Band, State, yeah. BOA, jeez.
I could have worn an Austin Powers shirt here today.
Oh, I know. I need to get the new ones out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
I could have worn my General Effect shirt.
Oh, speaking of General
Effect. Which I have won.
Now,
I have wore.
You and Roland are both tied for last place in our league.
And Evan.
No, Evan. Where's Evan at? Oh, no, he has got one more win.
No way.
He's at 2-4. We haven't taken this weekend's results into account.
Okay, so he'll be 2-4.
He'll be 2-5. Did you win?
No.
Oh, no.
Roland beat me.
You will be, I think, in sole possession of last place.
Oh, no.
This is a hot take.
Oh, my God.
This comes out in November, by the way. So by that point, we'll have a pretty good idea of where you really are.
All my starters. Like, I have Saquon. He just got back in this week.
Yeah.
But they were out for like
maybe you're going to make the final push. I mean, we've got like 6 weeks left.
Every time I check the waiver wire, there's nothing really better than what I have. Like,
correct.
And I've tried to get a trade and no one wants to trade with me.
We're in a 14-team league, by the way.
It's brutal.
Which is the most popular fantasy football league in the state because everyone goes, how do I get in your league? It's like, you don't get in our league. You get invited. Are you crazy?
I have Saquon. I have Deshaun Jackson out. Saquon just got back in. I mean, I'm a mess, and no one will trade with me. I've got some good stuff going on here.
Oh, you're the one that needs a flex player, right?
Yes, yeah, well, I've got nothing. Yeah. It's like, you can't be in it.
Roland did win. You are correct.
I have some of the best running backs in the league. I've got great tight ends. I got a great kicker.
Mm.
And I have terrible wide receiver and terrible quarterback and flex, and nobody wants to be part of it.
I'm sorry. Well, the good thing is Paul Pape lost, so he's at 2-5 also. All you got to do is win one. Have you played Evan yet?
Yeah, he beat me last week.
He did not. Oh, my God.
I'm pretty sure. I don't think I've beaten one person, right?
Yes, you beat one person.
Is that you?
No, I hadn't lost until this weekend. So, it wasn't. I think I beat you down. So.
Nah, it wasn't too bad.
Well, it could be worse. So what's next for Mike Bishop?
So right now I'm down here in Austin, able to visit you because I am Jason Robb. Come on the show.
Yes. Where are you at, Jason?
Jason Robb, friend of the pod.
Thank you. Yes.
He is a friend of the pod. He needs to be on the pod.
Yeah.
Jason is the head director at Rouse High School in Leander ISD. Correct. And he's working really hard to change that program and grow it from where it came.
Mm-hmm. By the time this comes out, he very well may have meddled at the state marching contest.
Well, and that's why
you're here.
Not to say that as humbly as possible. He reached out to me and said, I really want to have you around. We're going to try to make a push to get a medal at state.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. And the staff that he has is fantastic, but none of them have meddled at state before. And I think he wanted someone who has had experience. Hopefully we will all be able to say we've meddled at state by the end of the year.
Correct.
Right? Because they all are really good and they all deserve it.
Jason didn't when he was an assistant at Cedar Park?
He's the only one.
Gotcha. Okay.
Aside from him. And that's actually have a member who was at Cedar Park High School.
Caitlin Hall. No.
No, a member in the band now.
Oh, they moved to Rouse from Cedar Park.
And so if they get a medal, they will be the only person in the state of Texas to have a medal back to back.
Oh my
God. In these two. I mean, no one else has moved.
Wow.
Right.
So that's amazing.
That kid will be the only one with two medals in 2 years.
That's kind of cool. Yeah.
Or 3 years, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm here because of that. Mm-hmm. And I've been back. Jason's got me flying in and out back to Philly because I do have a wife and a life and Westchester University and comparable Golden Ram marching band.
Go Rams.
Go Rams.
Or Ram Up.
Rams Up.
Rams Up.
Back home. So, and United Percussion auditions are taking place. And there's things back home that I take care of. So I've been going back and forth. I'm actually leaving on Wednesday to go back because this weekend, my wife's family, all the guys, my wife's family, and with myself included, the cousins, the uncles, father-in-law, everybody, we've rented 2 RVs and we are road tripping up to Buffalo for the Eagles-Bills game.
Ooh, I bet that's going to be fun and nice and cold.
It's going to be cold. We're going to find ways to keep ourselves warm.
I think.
I mean, and so
any answer you give would not be appropriate for this podcast.
Right. It's going to be a lot of fun. I mentioned this to you on my way in. My wife and I just had an offer accepted on our first home purchase.
Oh my God, you're an adult now.
I know. It feels weird. I'm really excited about it. My favorite part about this house, I have two favorite parts.
Go ahead.
Number one, I currently live in a townhome in the city of Philadelphia. This is also a townhome in the city of Philadelphia that we'll be purchasing. But my office is in a bedroom with thin walls between our neighbors. Mm. And so I have to work in headphones all the time.
Oh, that's a joke.
And as you know, as someone who makes music, working in with headphones on all day is not, one, it's not the best way to mix, and two, it just sucks.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
Correct.
So this has this separated kind of, they made an addition on the back of their house that doesn't have any walls connecting on any sides. That will be my music studio.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm so pumped about that.
That's going to be great.
The next best thing about it is that it's about 350 feet away from where we currently live. It's around the corner.
Oh, wow. So you don't have to change
I can pretty much see it from my stoop when I go out front.
Wow.
And we're going to walk everything over as we move.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
We literally don't even need a truck.
perfect.
Like, we might need a couple of hand carts.
Yeah.
Maybe to move a bed in a truck or something. But, like, right. A pickup truck will be fine. We don't need, like, a box moving truck or anything. Yeah, I'm pretty pumped about that.
That's awesome.
We're going to close, hopefully, all fingers crossed, when this podcast comes out. Maybe we'll have closed. I don't know.
Wow. I'll be a homeowner.
Yeah. And I'll be moving. And it'll be awesome.
That's awesome. Congratulations on that, Michael.
Really excited.
Is there anything you want to plug? A website, an email address, a mixtape?
My mixtape's about to drop. Hot. Word. No. MikeBishopMusic.com if you want to check out what I'm doing. I'm on Instagram at Mike Bishop. Hmm. On Twitter at underscore Mike Bishop, because there's an at Mike Bishop taken that isn't used.
I've reported that
to Twitter 100 times and they don't do anything about
Come
it.
Come on.
And it drives me crazy. And I'm hoping that one day I'll produce something that gets me a little blue check mark.
Yes.
And then I'll have some power.
Correct.
And I can say, give me my name.
Yes.
Because it's my name on Instagram. It's my name on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like, I have my at Mike Bishop everywhere.
It's like, if they don't use it after 5 years, it should just go back.
I've been on Twitter since 2009 and I can't get it.
You're an early adopter. Whole
time. Yes, I am. An early adopter Instagram as well.
Ugh.
Yeah. Twitter. Twitter, I just talk about Philly sports.
Oh. That's so worth a follow right there.
Yeah, if you want to engage in some Philly sports talk, I'm on there. Instagram at Mike Bishop. I post a lot of travel stuff there. I'm on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I've reached the 5,000 limit, friend, too many times. Humble brag. But I keep it below 5,000 so that you can friend me and then therefore follow what I do.
Is that how that works, really?
Yeah, everything I post is public.
Oh,
if someone has a friend request pending for you, they're now following you.
What?
And they can see everything that you post that's public.
Oh my God. I should stop talking bad about people that I haven't accepted yet.
I have to say, Daniel, this has been a lot of fun.
Oh, well, thank you. It's been fun as well.
I've always dreamed of doing a podcast just like this.
Really?
Really? Wow. Really. And so,
I'm sorry that I beat you to it.
No, it's not. I don't even feel like that. I think it's cool that you're doing it. I'm happy for you. And I feel
you're the greatest guest in the history of Sketchbook Podcast.
Well, it's I'm sure it's a very long
history. The list is long and distinguished. If you didn't bring me a pizza or anything like that from Pizza by Angelo's or Angelo's
South Philly. Shout out to Angelo's South Philly. Shout out to Pizza Shack of Maxon. Shout out to...
When I go to Philly again, I'm going to ask you about all these pizza places.
Shout out to Jim's on South.
Tell my wife, we're only eating pizza in Philly, so
yeah,
get ready.
You got to do it.
Michael, it has been a pleasure to have you here today. You are an absolute delight. Please remember to hit them low. Hit them high and watch our eagles fight.
Fly.
Is it fly?
Yeah.
No, it's fight.
Hit them low, hit them high.
Did you know that they changed the word? It used to be fight, eagles, fight. I just, you know what? I did my research. I'm sorry. I don't know how it goes. Well,
I love that you ended it like that, though. That's nice.
Fly, eagles, fly.
Birds.
This episode of Sketchbook Podcast is hosted by, edited by, and produced by me, Daniel Mathoy Jr. in Austin, Texas. Our logo is created by John Suh of Purpose Designs, and our music is provided by Epidemic Sound. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SketchbookPod, and to send us questions, comments, suggestions, or concerns, email us at sketchbookpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. And as always, Michael, there's a very big difference between these two pizza places, both in quality of ingredients and overall taste. Which one did you order from?